The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, it sounds like you guys are feeling nice and relaxed, and I thought that maybe it would be a good opportunity while everybody's feeling in their sort of holiday mood to talk a little bit about politics before we get on to other things. There was this expanded Norwegian law that was passed into the Knesset last night. The Norwegian law is a law that allows those members of Knesset who have been elected, have been appointed to government positions, to be ministers in the government, to resign their Knesset position and allow the next members on the list of their respective parties to become members of Knesset. That's the Norwegian law, because what usually happens, of course, is we have the list drawn up, people get elected, then the ministerial appointments are made. And in order to try somehow to involve more people in the workings of government and the workings of the political system, they try and include people who are slightly lower down the list, get them into the Knesset. And in order for that to happen, the ministers who are further up the list resign their Knesset seats. They give those up and they take on their ministerial positions, and they allow other people to come into the Knesset. And for the Blue and White Party, for Kahol Levan, this is a big deal, because 12 of their 15 Knesset members have ministerial positions. So effectively what they wanted to do was to bring new blood in to allow additional people to undertake the parliamentary work that Knesset members are really obliged or expected to undertake. But of course, for those people who are also undertaking ministerial roles, their parliamentary work kind of gets put to one side in favor of their ministerial positions.
Interesting.
So this was passed last night. All is not well within the coalition. Benny Gantz and Prime Minister Netanyahu are having a few disagreements. Things are not going particularly smoothly there. And it's going to be interesting to see how long it takes until, you know, there's a major disaster, major blow up between them. But I know that the Prime Minister expressed, I think yesterday, that things can't carry on like this. Very, very frustrated at the fact that he's not getting the support that he thought he would get from the Kahol Levan faction, who obviously are an important part of the coalition. So,
please just don't say new election. Please just don't say new election.
I'm not saying anything at all, Howard. You know, it will happen whether I say it or not. But it's clearly not going particularly well. And interestingly, this Norwegian law that was passed into law last night was not particularly supported by the Likud and by Prime Minister Netanyahu. And in despite that fact, Kahol Levan managed to get it through the Knesset, which, as I said, for them is a big deal because of the fact that they really want to release those 12 Knesset members to do their ministerial work and get other people into the Knesset.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating indeed, but let's just hope that everybody can keep it together. All right, this story really bothers me. Jordan's King Abdullah is reported to be refusing to talk to Prime Minister Netanyahu. The one thing we don't need in the Middle East is sulking and passive-aggressive behavior. It's bad enough without it, surely.
Well, passive-aggressive behavior is kind of the order of the day in the Middle East. And Jordan's King Abdullah II has been refusing to speak with Prime Minister Netanyahu over the phone, has been refusing to set dates for meetings. Apparently, Defense Minister Benny Gantz has requested a meeting with the King, and the King has ordered his court not to agree to set a date to meet with Benny Gantz. And so this is an interesting standoff, because one would have thought that even if he doesn't get along with Prime Minister Netanyahu, which we already know is a situation which is not new, it's not the first time that the King has refused calls from the Prime Minister, one would have thought that perhaps he would have found a way to meet with Benny Gantz in order to try somehow to get his message through to the Israeli government. But in this particular case, he's even refusing to meet with Benny Gantz. Apparently, Benny Gantz did want to talk about the annexation story with him. The King is very much opposed to this annexation story, even though, as we've said before, there are at least reports from the background that the King doesn't particularly support the idea of a Palestinian state coming into being. And I just wonder whether he sees the annexation as a step towards the establishment of the state.
Wow.
In an ironic sort of way.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so he might not be speaking to Netanyahu for not the reasons that we would have imagined.
Yeah. I mean, we know that the prime minister and the king have not got along already, you know, for many years. This is not a new situation at all. Mm-hmm. But now the king has made quite a number of public statements about being anti the annexation, and he's warned that it's caused, potentially could cause blow up in the relations between Israel and Jordan completely. Of course, there has been a peace agreement in place between Israel and Jordan since 1994. And so that would be quite disastrous if the king sought fit to blow up that peace treaty on the back of annexation plans or anything like that. Having said that, I think that the king also likes to get his word out into the public. He wants the Arab world to see that he is somehow acting in the interests of the general Arab world, on behalf of the Palestinians, on their behalf, and even though he doesn't necessarily always support them, and very often the public word of the king is not necessarily the private view of the king. He is very often being forced, particularly in his position as head of the Waqf, the religious council that rules over the Muslim sites of Jerusalem. He is expected to take a certain position in support of the Muslim world, in support of the Arab world, and even if he doesn't necessarily always privately agree with that view, at least, you know, in public he needs to send certain messages, and I'm not sure whether this might not be part of that process.
It will be interesting to see how this one plays out. Tell us about this rocket that was fired from Gaza last evening.
So a single rocket fired last night from Gaza landed in an open area. Apparently sirens were not fired, but there are reports that it landed quite close to kibbutz. It wasn't just simply in any old open area, but that it did come pretty close to an inhabited area of Israel in the south. Fortunately, no damage was caused. There were no injuries at all. It was just a single rocket, the first one that's been fired for more than a month. I think the last rocket that was fired was somewhere around the beginning of May, so more than a month since the last rocket was fired. And there were also balloons that have been sent over from Gaza yesterday, which is a little confusing because there was apparently an agreement that was reached that Qatari money would be released to Gaza, in return for which the Gazans agreed that they wouldn't allow the sending over of incendiary balloons at this time. In any event, the Qataris confirmed that Israel had not opposed the idea of sending money to Gaza, but the balloons nevertheless came yesterday, and of course there was a single rocket. The IDF did respond immediately. This is continues to be the Israeli government's policy with regard to any incendiary devices or rockets that are sent from Gaza, that the IDF will retaliate. There were airstrikes. There was tank fire that was targeted at a number of sites near Rafah and near Khan Yunis in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And the IDF did say that the airstrikes had targeted infrastructure that had been used for underground operations by Hamas, and that tanks had targeted military posts which were being used also by Hamas. We're not sure whether that rocket was fired by Hamas or not. No group has actually accepted responsibility. But there was talk about Hamas being opposed to the whole idea of annexation, and that they would respond to the annexation, even though it hasn't really happened, and even though the Israeli government has made it clear that no decision has been made. But Hamas are already expressing their opposition to any possible annexation within Judea and Samaria by sending this rocket, a single rocket. So, you know, in our terms, a relatively low-key kind of situation. And I think the IDF response overnight has also been relatively low-key. But, you know, the situation really hasn't changed a great deal in spite of Corona, in spite of Israel agreeing to allow this Qatari money into Gaza, in spite of Israel really helping to a large degree to help the Gazans with Corona outbreak in the Gaza Strip, which seems to have really been controlled So, you know, in return for that, we get rocket fire and incendiary balloons. And of course, people need to be very cautious. Unfortunately, the situation in the South hasn't changed. And now, of course, we're heading into school holidays. It's always a much more sensitive time, children around and about. So, you know, obviously there is a very eager, desire to try to somehow control, anything that are being, sent, that could potentially damage or injure people.
Incredible. And the Israeli economy is predicted to shrink by more than 6% during 2020. And that's, of course, due to the effects of the coronavirus. That's a big number.
Yeah, I mean, this is a report by the OECD that says that they think that there will be negative growth of 6.2% this year, even though the Bank of Israel has said that it sees the economy only shrinking by 4.5%. So I think, you know, as a result of the corona shutdown, the economy is almost certainly likely to shrink. Having said that, the inflationary index actually fell during the month of May by 0.3%, which was unexpected. Everybody had felt that inflation would go up. House prices are going up still, in spite of everything that's happening in the background. Unemployment clearly has gone up, with a lot of people having been sent home on leave without pay, and ultimately also been laid off as a result of the negative impact of the corona shutdown. But I think that the OECD's report is a very fascinating report to read, because it talks about the fact that Israel's lockdown measures were strict in relation to those of other countries, but shorter. So one would think that if they were strict but shorter, that that would actually be a good thing for the economy rather than a negative thing. And yet the OECD is seeing that, you know, the economy is going to shrink by this really substantial amount. But I think a lot of it depends on whether there might be a second wave. You know, everybody's talking about a second wave, and we certainly have had an uptick in the number of COVID-19 cases that have been diagnosed, especially in the areas of southern Tel Aviv and in Jaffa, where there's been a massive outbreak. And I saw just a quick snippet this morning, which talked about quite a big outbreak at Ichilov Hospital amongst medical staff, amongst doctors and nurses at the hospital. I'm not quite sure exactly what that means, but certainly Tel Aviv has been the focus of the outbreak, in the order of 150 to 200 new cases being diagnosed every day over the past week or so, which is certainly a significant uptick. But the OECD is more concerned about whether there might be a second wave when the winter comes again later this year, and whether that might not then contribute to a further decrease, you know, shrinking in the economy. But overall, the OECD report is quite positive about the way that Israel has handled the coronavirus, about the way that the government has funded, you know, really made funds available to try to help, and has been particularly complimentary about Israel's health system, which they think, you know, they think that the strict measures together with a good public health system has really contributed to the fact that only 302 people have passed away as a result of corona, which relatively speaking is a low number for the population that Israel has. Of course, every person is important, and, you know, we can't just simply easily dismiss the loss of 302 lives, but relatively low compared to other countries of similar population.
Absolutely right. And certainly if we see what is happening in South Africa at the moment, where the virus is absolutely exploding, we certainly can see and appreciate the manner in which Israel dealt with it. It's very impressive.
And, absolutely.
Let's hope that it continues to remain under control, even if there are these mini outbreaks, which I suspect is they've predicted as well.
Well, I think it's something that we're going to have to live with, Howard. I think that corona is not just simply going to go away the minute the lockdown goes away. I think it's something that we're going to have to cope with on an ongoing basis. And I think we're now trying to develop the tools to cope with these mini outbreaks as they come around, without going completely wild and closing everything down again, keeping people at home and closing the economy down. The question is whether we're able to cope with it while continuing to move, while continuing to work, while continuing to open the economy. I think that that's going to be one of the biggest challenges over the next 12 months or so.
Absolutely, absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always.